Today's daf in the Daf Yomi is the Gemara in Kesubas daf Samach Vav. We're going to begin towards the bottom of Samach Hei Omid Beis with the brand new start of the sixth perek. And we begin with Mishnah about 10 lines up from the bottom, Samach Hei Omid Beis. The Mishnah tells us something which we learned already previously. More or less, why is it repeating it for us? And the Chiddush will be towards the end of the Mishnah. So the Mishnah begins and says, Mitzias Isha. If a woman finds something, so it belongs to her husband. Likewise, Umasi Adah. Any handiwork that she does, any work that she brings in, the money that she brings in from that work, libala, belongs to her husband. So any fines that she has, as well as the earnings that she makes from her job, so that goes to her husband. As we had pointed out previously, this was quid pro quo. The husband is obligated to go and support her. So we said in the previous parak, Mishum Eba, that he shouldn't hate her and say, listen, I'm supporting you, and you keep all the money that you make or you find. So therefore, Mishum Eba, in order to prevent this hatred that would result, so she gives him these mitzios that she finds, or maiziyodeh, her handiwork. However, v'yirushasa, anything that she inherits, that's the first pshat in Rashi, which Tosos prefers as well. Hu ochel peros b'chaya. So the inheritance of that, so it belongs to her. However, the husband has the right to use that. So let's say she inherited a field. So the husband gets to plant the field, and all the crops, all the peros that come from that field belong to the husband. And if he, in fact, divorces her, so then she gets back the field extant the way it is. If she dies, Rachmana Litzlan, so then he goes and inherits the field from her. That's the simple understanding. Rashi Dira Masl v'Yerushasa, however, has a second shot. He says, Lishna Achrina, it says that this is V'im Meisa B'chayav Yorsha. V'Yerushasa means that the husband inherits the wife. If she dies during his lifetime, so then he inherits her. And then the next part would be a separate statement, V'hu Ochel Peros B'chaya. And similarly, anything that she brings in as dowry, he has the right, for example, to use the Nichsei Malug that she brings in for the Peros that it produces, and he returns it to her at the time of either the divorce or Rachmana Litzlan. If he dies, it goes back to her. Okay. So those are the two understandings. Tosfos prefers the first understanding, which is the way that we had it, was that anything that she inherits during her lifetime, her husband has the right to the peros. It's one statement. Mishnah continues, Boshasa, which is another word for her embarrassment, or Pagama, which is another word for the nezek that she may get from being damaged by somebody else. So Rachmana Litzlan, if somebody does something to her that embarrasses her and or damages her, so then Shalah, she gets to keep that money. We've already discussed previously many times, there are five different types of payments that can be caused by damage, tort damages. And this is Nezek, Tsar, Ripui, Sheves, and Boshes. So our Mishnah only deals with two of them. Nezek is the same thing as Pagama, her devaluation based upon the damage that he did to her, what she would be sold without this damage on the open slave market, and what she's worth now with such damage on the open slave market. That amount of deterioration, what she's worth, is called the Nezek, or the Pagam, that was done to her. The next one is Tsar. Tsar the Mishnah doesn't discuss, because it's obvious that that Tsar goes to her. Why would you think her husband should be entitled to the money for which she had suffered Nebuch pain? So the Tzar goes to her, the Mishnah doesn't have to tell us that. That's the way the Mefarshim understand it. So after that, you have Ripui, that's the doctor bills. Well, the husband has to pay for the doctor bills, so of course he would get reimbursed for that, since he has to outlay the money for her doctor bills, so therefore any payment for the doctor bills goes to the husband. Mishnah didn't have to tell us that either. So you have Nezek, Tzar, Ripui. Sheves is the unemployment benefits. So since she has to pay all her produce, all her work to her husband, her handiwork goes to her husband, so of course the husband's entitled to any unemployment that gets from the person who damaged her. So that was also clear. It didn't have to be mentioned in the Mishnah. And the last one is Nezek, Tzar, Ripui, Sheves, and Boshes. So the Boshes, that goes to her. That's what the Mishnah tells us. That's the opinion of the Tanakhama. Reuven ben Sera disagrees somewhat, and that we'll see in the Gemara is the reason why we have this Mishnah, because until now everything essentially was learned previously. But here we have this machlokas what we're introducing. So Reuven ben Sera omer bisman shebiseisa, if the damage that was done to her is on a hidden part of her body, a part of her body that would normally be covered up. Tosus explains in Dibra Masa Bisman Shebiseisir, Pagam Shebiseisir, this damage is done in a hidden part of her body, Bemokum She'ein Bnei Adam Yecholim Liros, where people can't see the such damage, and as opposed to Shebegali, damage is done in the open, Shepotza Bifonel, for example, she was hit in her face, Bemokum She'ein Lekol, where it's visible to everybody else. And therefore, in this situation, Rav Yehuda Maseira says, if it's a seiser, a hidden type of a wound, which only her husband will know about, nobody else will know about this, so then she gets 2/3 of the damages paid to her directly, lo shnei chalokim, velo echad, and 1/3 goes to the husband directly. As we'll see in a moment, he gets that paid right now from the person that damaged his wife. Ubizman shebegali, the damage is done in an open spot in her body, so then lo shnei chalokim, the husband who suffers in that situation additional embarrassment, so he gets 2 chalokim for this, the law echot, and she gets one chalik of the damages. So if the damages are $100, she gets $66 and she gets $33. Now, how do we pay these damages? Shelo inosimiyat. His damages are paid to immediately. Now, her damages are also paid immediately, but she doesn't collect them immediately. For Shelo, the damages that go to her, either the two-thirds, if it's a bisman shebeseso, or the one-third bisman shebegoli, so she gets that, but she has to go and buy with it karka, so the husband will have the right to the peros in that situation. Yelo kach b'em karka, v'ocho peros, and that's where the husband gets to enjoy this benefit during the time that they're married. And again, Rahman al-Islam, if they get divorced, so then the property that was bought with this money from the damages from the busha, so that goes back to her. And if he dies, so then she gets it as well. Okay. Gemara starts off and says, what's the chiddush of the Mishnah? So, my kamash v'lom, we already learned this. Tanina, we learned this earlier on daf mem vav omud beis. It said, we learned over there in the Mishnah, ha'av zakai bevito b'kidusha. Father has the right to get the money, the kesef kiddushin, that's given to his daughter. Bekesef b'shtar rubia, regardless of how it's given, whether it's given over kesef or it's given over shtar, or the marriage is through bia, which again we never recommended. That was Chazal would give malchus to somebody that married with bia, but there would be still an exchange of money. Any money that was given in this situation for this kiddushin went to the father, and likewise the father is entitled to, since he has to support his daughter. Albeit it's not a chiv to do so, but since he supports his daughter most of the time, so he's zakai b'mitziyasa, he gets any mitzias that she finds, uv'mayisiyodel, and anything that she earns, u'bafaras and the ra. And while she's living with him, she's not yet a bogeris, so he has the ability to go be made for any of the darish that she makes. Likewise, if Rahman Litzlan, she is unable to accept a divorce, she's too young, she was married off as a katana, and she doesn't understand, so the husband divorces her, makabel is gifta, so the father in that situation accepts her divorce. We discussed this previously, what the ramifications are, how that exactly works. We won't go through it again now. If she got some additional properties, let's say there was an inheritance that she got that the father didn't get, it was, let's say, through her mother, and the father didn't get this, so then the father would not be entitled to go and eat the peros from that property, b'chayah, as opposed to the husband who can. Once she's fully married, nisus, so then her husband has additional powers or rights that the father didn't have. Yasser, Allah habal, the father didn't have this right, the husband does have this right, shu'ochel peros b'chayah. So if she inherited something, her husband, as opposed to the father who didn't, her husband does have the right to take that inheritance and invest in the property. If it was property, he just gets to use the property, and he gets the peros of that property. Now, clearly, it said over here that the husband is entitled to her ma'aseh adeh and mitziyasa. So if the husband is yasser olav habal, if the husband has more power than the father, so then certainly the husband is entitled to her mitziyas and her ma'aseh adeh. So what's the mission telling us over here? So Gemara says, no, the machlokis that we have between Yehuda Meseira and the Chachamim is the Chiddush. Boshta o pagamo itztrichalei pluksa the Yehuda Meseira v'rabbanan. This is what it needed to tell us. This we didn't have previously, and that's why our Mishnah is over here. Tosus has a whole discussion in the first Tosus in the Masech, the Mitzias Isha, as to why our perek is where it's located. There are different kirsos. They have the perek located in a different place, but this explains why our perek is located over here. Okay. Tani Tano Kamei the Rabba. One of them, Arayim, learned the following brisa over in front of Rabba, and he said as follows: Mitziyas so isha liatzma. Any finding that a woman has belongs to her, not to her husband. And Rabbi Akiva disagrees. Rabbi Akiva Omer Labala, it belongs to her husband. Now in our Mishnah, it said seemingly like Rabbi Akiva, Mitziyas isha goes Labala. So the question that Rabba now has to this Amor, learned this brisa, he says Amalei, he says Hashta. I don't understand that you're saying that Rabbi Akiva holds like this. We have, in fact, the Shita Rabbi Akiva, Umaha Dofa, any extra earnings that she makes above and beyond the expected amount of wool that she's expected to weave. And we turn to Samach Vavav and Aleph, the Maisi Adel, he, which is called her Maisi Adel, so Rabbi Akiva Liatzba, that she gets to keep it. So if she gets to keep the Hadofa, the extra work, so then certainly Mitzios, lo koshikain, so certainly she should get to keep her Mitzios. We're going to see in a moment why. What's the Havamina to say if the Hadafa, the extra earnings that she makes, she's entitled to keep that, so why should she also be entitled to keep the Messiah? So we'll explain that more in a moment. But right now, we're suggesting that Rabbi Akiva clearly holds that the extra earnings, she gets to keep for herself. So Rabbi Akiva says Liatzva belongs to her. So Mitzias Lakoshkin. So certainly she'll be entitled to keep the Mitzias. Why is that? Because it's not. Because we learned in the Mishnah in the Darm, which we had mentioned previously in our Masechta as well. And the Mishnah there says, Konim, if the woman makes a lashon of a konim, which is a lashon of a carbon, konim is a word that was used instead of carbon, which means she makes a neder that this should be like a carbon to you. Shani osa l'ficha. Anything that I make should be a carbon to you. In other words, it should be also for you to get benefit from anything that I make. In this situation, the Tanakhama says, Eino tzarech l'hafir, the husband doesn't have to go and be made for that neder because she can't be going and making a neder against something that doesn't belong to her, and her ma'isi yodel belong to the husband. So therefore, the Tanakhama says, husband doesn't waste his time being made for it, and in fact, if he wasn't made for it, it doesn't take effect anyway. Rabbi Akiva disagrees. Rabbi Akiva Omer, no, he should be made for it. You're fair. Why? Because Shemo Tadif Olav Yosim and Aroilo. Because maybe she'll make more than the husband is entitled to, and that Hadafa, that extra, belongs to her. So clearly we see that Rabbi Akiva holds that the Hadafa, the extra, belongs to her. So if the extra belongs to her, shouldn't the Mitzias also belong to her? Kasha on this Brisa. Rava says to the Samara that taught him this Brisa that Rabbi Akiva holds that the Mitzias go to the husband. You see clearly that he says they go to her. So Gemara says, no. Therefore, we have to flip it around. The Brisa's girsa was wrong. Ella epoch, mitzias ish labala. The Tanakhama says that the mitzias of ish go to the bala, and Rabbi Akiva omer liatzma. Rabbi Akiva says it goes to her. Oh, exactly like we just said, Rabbi Akiva should hold. But the Gemara questions this and says, why are you assuming that if she has the hadapa, that she also should have the mitzias? Baha, kiosa, Ravin, when Ravin came from Israel, to Babel, he said over the name of Yochanan, Amr of Yochanan, Ba'adofa Shelo Ayyadei Adchak, Hadofa that is done without a tremendous amount of extra work, what is that? So Rashi explains, Shelo Ayyadei Adchak means Kagon Shi Ironis. She's a woman of the city, and therefore she has a certain skill set. She learns certain things, Ubalas Malacha, and she knows how to do certain Malacha, and therefore it comes to her relatively easily. She doesn't just know what a farm girl knows, let's say that's so she knows how to be doing accounting, she knows how to do law, she knows how to be a doctor, so she therefore can make a bigger amount of money without tremendous exertion on her part. So this hadofa shelo ayidei adchak, it doesn't come because she's working extra hard, it's because she has a certain skill set. So in this situation, kuliyama lepligi de baal hevi, everybody agrees that that belongs to the husband. Even Rabbi Akiva agrees that that belongs to the husband. So in this situation, where does Rabbi Akiva argue with the Tanakhama? Ki pligi, Rabbi Akiva argues with the Tanakhama, bi'adofa shayidei adchak, for extra hours that she puts in. As Rashi says, kigon, shedocha ka'atzma v'edifa. She goes and works a second job at night. She goes and works extra hours. In that situation, the Tanakhama savalabala, the Tanakhama only says that it belongs to her husband, and Rabbi Akiva savar liatzma. Rabbi Akiva says it belongs to her. So now, why are we saying that Rabbi Akiva holds that the regular hadofa belongs to the husband, and only the hard tircha, the extra dechak, that she does belongs to her? So the Mitzias, they should fall into the category of the regular Hadafa, Beli Tircha, Lo Ayidei Adchak, and therefore the Mitzios should be compared to this Maisi Yodea that are Hadafa, that Lo Ayidei Adchak, and should belong, in fact, to the husband and not go to her. So how could Rabbi Akiva savra that it goes to her? So Amar Papa, no. Who says we compare Mitzios to something that is Lo Ayidei Adchak? We compare Mitzios to something that is Ayidei Adchak. Mitziyasa ki hadofa shayidei adchak domi. And that is the machlokas. Plukta Rabbi Akiva v'rabbanan. So that exactly is the machlokas. That's what it's based upon. Now, what exactly is this that the mitzios that are ayidei adchak? So Rashi explains, and we're dealing here with a situation where she worked very hard to get these mitzios. For example, the rov mitzios, Rashi says, Diba Masu Mashani, he says, the rov mitzios tzarech lachzer acharem. You just don't find mitzios. Yeah, of course, you walk in the street, sometimes you see a $5 bill. But most of the time, to really go make a living off mitzias, so to say, to really look for mitzias, you have to look for them. So you have to work hard and look for them. For example, you have to go out to an area where, let's say, the waves come in, and then they retreat and recede, and some of the fish are left behind. So these fish that are left behind in the dry ground, you got to go look for them, search them. You don't just walk in the street and say, hey, there's a dead fish that washed up on the shore. You got to go look for it. Yes, it's a mitzia, but you have to work hard to find it. Oh, tzvi shavur, or you're looking for a deer that has a broken leg. It's lame in some way. So you have to go look and look and look. Oh, I'll find a deer that has a broken leg, and that's a free venison. Oh, l'chapi sima b'karko, or to look for some sort of a find, a sima, a treasure in the ground. So you have to go and take out your divining rod and take out a metal detector, and you have to really work on it to find something. So you just don't find them easily. So this is considered like ayideh adchak. And there Rabbi Akiva says that if it's ayideh adchak, it belongs to her and not to the husband. More questions and says, "Boy, Rapapa says, what happens if she didn't work extra hours, but she worked twice as hard? For example, she did two things for her husband simultaneously. We'll give an example of this in a moment. So Rabbi Papa says, in that situation, Ma, what's it then? Is this like considered lo idea chak, or is this considered idea chak? And Ravina asks the same similar question. Boy, Ravina, shlosho arba vasach. She does three or four things at the same time. Ma, is that called lo ayideh adchak? Because it's the same amount of time, but it's a lot more effort. Is that called ayideh adchak? How do you do three or four things at the same time? So Rashi, Dira Maslosh, Daim, Shalosh, Arba Vasachas tells us, for example, she's Shomeres Kishuim. She's being paid to work as a watch person for the field of Kishuim, of gourds. And while she's doing that, Vitova Pishton, while she's functioning as a watchman, it's just to scare away the animals. She doesn't have to do anything. The fact that she's a human being is there. That will scare away the animals from eating the kishuim, or a burglar from coming to eat the kishuim. Meanwhile, she's sitting there, v'tova pishton, and she's spinning flax. So she's getting paid to do that. And while she's there, while she's spinning the flax, she's also tutoring somebody. So she's also giving a music class at the same time. She's teaching people songs. So her sitting there watching the field doesn't involve any extra exertion. Her spinning the flax, that she's doing that while she's singing and teaching. All of these are done simultaneously without a lot of extra exertion. And she's also warming up some eggs in her bosom or in her lap at the same time. So therefore, this would be four things that she's doing at once, but it's not a tremendous amount of dechak. So how do we view this? Shloi dechak? Or, no, she's a very diligent person. She's a very much of a go-getter, and she wants to earn money. So maybe this is called ayideh adchak. So Gemara says, take it. We don't come to an answer. Then we quote the Mishnah. Mishnah said, boshta pagama. She gets the money that for the boshes and the pagam, the nezik and the humiliation that she suffers, so she gets paid that. That goes to her. As opposed to, Rebbe Maseira says, it depends. If it's an open wound or it's a concealed wound, then the payment will be different. Gemara starts off and asks, Maskel l'rova bar Rav Chanon, Rava bar Rav Chanon asks the following shaila. Elamayata, if you're telling me over here that the husband, according to Yehuda Mivaseira, is entitled to embarrassment when the embarrassment was to his wife, so then shouldn't he also be entitled to embarrassment if his horse gets embarrassed? Elamayata, B.H. Susasu Shachavero, if somebody goes and embarrasses the horse of a friend, which we'll ask in a moment how you do that, so Hochanami, the boy Lemitan Le Boshes, does the owner of the horse get entitled to get Boshes in that situation because his horse was embarrassed? Of course not. So what are you talking about? So Gemara asks the obvious question, Vasus Barboshes, but the horse isn't capable of being embarrassed. So Gemara says, you're right. Ella, what are we talking about? For example, Rokak Bivigdo Shel Chavero, if somebody spat on the clothing of their friend. So in this situation, do we say, well, he spat on my clothing and that embarrasses me, and therefore I should be entitled to get payment for embarrassment? But that's not the halacha. Hochanami, the boy, Lemeitan Lo Boshes, Lay Boshes, that should we pay him Boshes for that? And you tell me, yeah, let's do that. V'chitem Hochanami, that we should pay him Boshes for that. But the Mishnah tells us that that's not true. The Mishnah, Baba Kama, tells us, if somebody spit at somebody else and the roke reached him, so then it depends. If it actually landed on him, he's entitled to being paid for boshes. But if it only landed on his clothing, so he's not entitled to being paid for boshes. Similarly, upar rosh isha, if a man took off a woman's tichel, so that's a big embarrassment for a woman to be bareheaded in public, so there's a certain penalty that the man has to pay for humiliating her. If ever talisa man, or if you take off a guy's shirt, in those situations, it's very embarrassing. So then, chayev li tein lo, arba meo zuz. There's a 400 zuz penalty that you pay for humiliating that person. Now, Amar Rapapa, Rapapa qualified that and said, Lo Shana, we only said that in the case of spitting that you pay, Ela Bo, if it landed on him, Avo Bibigdo, if it only landed on his clothing, Potter, so then you wouldn't have to go pay. So clearly, there is no din that if you spit on somebody's clothing, the person's entitled to getting humiliation. So how does Yehuda Maseira say that when a man spits on somebody's wife, husband's entitled to compensation for that? So Gemara says, Bibigdo, less lazy lusa. However, Ishto, now the gears we have is this law, but the Ayvitz, as you can see, the Mesor Sashas, Oz Dalit says that it should be Ishto is lay zilusa. The husband suffers embarrassment when his wife is embarrassed. And therefore, by his clothing, he doesn't suffer embarrassment if somebody spits on his clothing. But if somebody spits on his wife, somebody does something to humiliate his wife, so the man suffers embarrassment too. And that's why Yehuda Miserah says he's entitled to some of the embarrassment payment. Only Ravina Ravashi, Ravina questions this, and he says to Ravashi, Elamiata, based on what you're saying, B'esh Ani Ben Tovin, if you in fact go and embarrass a poor person who is from a large family of good people, so then, De'is Lahu Zilusa Lakulu, B'nei Mishpacha, Hachanami De'boy Lemetan Lahu, Boshes Lahu B'nei Mishpacha, if you embarrass this poor person, he has 25 relatives, so all those 25 relatives are entitled to go get humiliation because they're embarrassed that this person was embarrassed publicly. So the Gemara says, Amalei. So Ravashi tells back to Ravina, Hasam lav gufayu. Their family is different than a wife. Family, yes, it could be somewhat embarrassing, but you're not entitled to get any payment for being embarrassed by a family member of yours, but your wife is different. The family is not really considered your goof. And therefore, the family is not entitled to payment of embarrassment if a member of the family was embarrassed. However, with a wife, famous idea, very important idea, every husband should know this, ishto gufe havoi. Your wife is like you. Your wife is part of you. Ishto kigufo havoi. Your wife is like a part of you. And therefore, the famous memory that they said over from Rav Aryeh Levin Zatzal, when he went to the doctor with his wife, and his wife had a problem with her foot, and he goes to the doctor and he says, our foot hurts us. So ishto kigufo. So you should feel that way, like Rav Aryeh Levin felt towards his wife, like the great Gedolim always felt towards his wife, that they were one and the same. And therefore, if your wife is embarrassed, or Yudim Be'ezer says, then you're embarrassed. And therefore, you're entitled to compensation for that as well. Okay. Next Mishnah. Haposek mos l'chasano, if a man arranges to go and give to his future son-in-law, they have the erisin, and it's part of the conditions of the erisin. He said, I'll give X amount of dowry to you when you get married to my daughter. And then Nebuch, the guy dies. Umeis chasano. The prospective son-in-law dies after the erisin, before the nisuin. So now the woman falls ibum. They obviously didn't have any children. They weren't allowed to have relations. So she falls as a shomeris yavim to her future or current brother-in-law, to the brother of her dead husband. So what's the din? Can this brother-in-law demand the same dowry that the dead brother had demanded? So Amru Chacham, the Chacham say, Yochlo Shomer, the father-in-law can say to this son-in-law, future son-in-law of the Yavam, and say to him, listen, if you want to take my daughter in Yibam, Gizun Tehet. But if you don't want to, also Gizun Tehet. But I ain't giving you the dowry that I promised your brother. I was willing to give it to your brother for whatever the reason. More will say, even the brother who's left alive is a big Talmud Chacham, and the brother who died is not such a big Talmud Chacham. Even there, we say, listen, for whatever the reason, to him I was willing to give the dowry, but to you I'm not. And therefore, I don't wish to give it to you, and I'm not going to give it to you, and you either go and do Yibam on her, or you do Chalitza with her, whatever you want, but I'm not giving you the dowry that your brother would have gotten. Now, the Mishnah introduces some new ideas, and it tells us how you go and codify the dowry that the husband is giving to his wife and that the father is giving to his daughter. So, Paskul Ahachnis Lo Elev Dinar, if the father of the Kala promised to give over here $1,000, that's ready cash, so therefore they write that in the Ksuba, who posei kinegdon chameshes rimona. They write into the Ksuba that there were $1,500, an Elev Dinar, 100 dinar make up a money. So if we have over here chameshes rimona, that's 1,500 dinar. I use the term dollars. So he only gave $1,000, but they write into the ksuba that he got $1,500. And the reason behind this is because it's ready cash and he can very easily invest it, and therefore it is able to be used right away. And it's not a problem of interest because technically, if he were to die right away, the estate would pay that full 1,500 and not 1,000. So it's not considered an interest type of a payment. And therefore, this $1,000 that he gets is ready cash since it's so easy to use, so he has to write down that he obligates himself to $1,500 in the ksuba. However, if they bring in not ready cash, but they bring in various types of metaltlin or even karka, so then in that situation, they evaluate it at the wedding. Since they're evaluating at the wedding, the Mefarshim bring down over here that they're going to evaluate it in a more favorable way, as Rashi says, so that the husband should love his wife. Wow, look how much they're giving. And therefore, everybody knows that it's over-evaluated. So if there is a shum who posek pachos chomish, if they evaluate it at the wedding, if they evaluate it beforehand and it's a hard evaluation, so then it's exactly what it's worth. There's $1,000 worth of property, it's $1,000 worth of property. But here, if they're evaluating at the wedding, everybody knows that they elevated a little bit more than usual and they tack on some additional evaluation to it, and everybody knows that, and therefore, he only has to write down really into the ksuba a fifth less than what they appraised. Pachus chomesh. So if it was $100, so they only write down $80. Shum b'moneh, v'shav b'moneh, ein lo ela moleh. But if the appraisal was done beforehand and it really was a real appraisal for a moneh, that's what it's really worth. So then they have to write down a moneh in the ksuba. They can't take off or add on. They don't elevate it by 50% like in the case of the ready cash, but they don't deduct by a fifth, the 20%, if it was done at the time of the wedding, but if it was evaluated beforehand, so then whatever they evaluated it, that's a real evaluation. So the Mishnah now repeats itself, and it says, shum b'moneh, if they evaluated it for a moneh, so he no senes shloshim v'echot selav adinar. So if they put down in the ksuba that it's a moneh, so then she has to add on that extra money, that fifth that he deducted from it, so she has to add on that fifth. Again, it's a fifth from the outside, which is a fourth from the inside, so she has to add on to the total amount, shloshim v'echad sela v'dinar. So she has to add on 31.25, because there are four dinarim in a sela, so she has to give him 31 sela and a quarter of a sela, and that is the poches chomesh that we're assuming. Now here, it's where she has to go put that in. He's writing it down in the ksuba, and they're appraising it at that amount, so she has to go in it on the additional amount because they are always over-evaluating in her favor. So she has to really give then the extra quarter from the inside, which is a fifth from the outside. Similarly, if it was appraised for a value of 400 dinars, so he knows senes chamesh mi'os. She has to give a quarter from the inside, which is 100, which is a fifth from the outside, which is 500. So the 100 she adds on is a fifth of the 500, or a fourth from the 400. So we obviously gave two very similar examples. We want to say, what do you have to give us two examples for? The Mishnah continues and says, Ma, and we turn to Savachvav Omid Beis, Ma Shechosin Posek, who Posek Pachos Chomesh. And likewise, whatever the Chosin over here states, so he agrees to pay a fifth less than what it's appraised for at the wedding. Now, as I mentioned, this seems to be somewhat repetitive, and we'll explain that in a moment in the Mishnah, and actually the next Mishnah as well. But first we question the first part of the Mishnah, where it said that if the woman Nebuch lost her husband before the Nisun took place and she falls in Yibam, so her father, who was willing to give the dowry to the first original husband, says, I don't want to give it to the Yavam, he's perfectly entitled to say that. Tanur Rabbanan, the Braisa says, Ein Tzarich Lomar, we certainly don't have to say in the situation where the Rishon was a Talmud Chacham, the first husband Nebuch passed away was a big Talmud Chacham, Yisheni Hamaretz, and the brother was an Amaretz, so the Yavam is an Amaretz. So certainly in that situation, we understand the father doesn't want his daughter to marry the Amaretz. He says, listen, I don't have a choice. If you want to do Yibam, fine. If you want to do chalitza, even better. But I'm not paying you a penny to go and marry her. El Afilu, even it's the other way around. The Rishon Amaretz. The first guy was the Amaretz. No, for whatever the reason, she married the Amaretz. Rishani Talmud Chacham. And the second one is a big Talmud Chacham. You might have thought, in this situation, the father cannot say that, well, I'm not willing to give you the dowry. So Mishnah tells us, Yochalom, the father can say, for whatever the reason, he was willing to give to the Amaretz, to the Talmud Chacham, I don't feel like giving it to you. He's allowed to do that. It's his choice. Now we go to the second part of the Mishnah where it said, Paskul Hachlis Toel of Dinam Chule. So we said that in the situation where the goods were actually evaluated, the item was evaluated at the wedding, so then there's a fifth that we deduct because everybody knows that they overestimated it. So where it says, how is this any different than the first part? We said that if it was evaluated for a moneh, shum b'moneh, so then she has to pay the 31.25 slayim because of the pachas of the chomesh. And then the situation where it was 400, so she has to give 500. So again, it's the same exact thing. What's the chiddush? So Gemara says, no, it wanted to teach us that whether we have a large amount of money or a small amount of money, Tana Shuma Rabba, the Tani Shuma Zuta, it wanted to teach us the same halacha applies whether it's a large amount or a small amount. Why would you think otherwise? So Rashi tells us, the Dira Mas, who Tani Shuma Zuta, that when you have a Shuma Rabba, who Derech Hashamoyim La'loso Al Shavya, that when it's a large amount, they might be more accurate. Or alternately, inami shumazuta ikedemalu leitvei shlotus baze b'nei. So, they're a smaller amount. People might be more quick to raise it because it's such a small amount. So, it's coming to teach us. No, these rules of poches chomesh apply whether it's a large amount or a small amount. And likewise, it had to tell us tana shumodidei, tana shumodida. It told us both whether he brings it in or she brings it in. The same din applies. Now we go to the next mishnah. If the woman, meaning her father, said they're going to bring in a certain amount of money for the dowry for her nedunya, so paskulachnis loksofim, they said they're going to bring in money, so salo nasa shisha dinarin. So if they said they're bringing in a sela, like we had in the previous Mishnah, and again we're going to ask, how come you have to tell it to us again? So you have to, he has to go, since it's ready cash, so he has to add on 50%. So nasa shisha dinarin. A sela is 4 dinarim, so if they give a sela, which is 4 dinarim, so he has to write in the ksuba 6 dinarim, 50% more from the inside, which is a third from the outside. Hechasun mekabel lo avasor dinarim lekupa. Likewise, the husband has to go, and for every 100 mana that she brings into the to the dowry, so he has to give her 10 dinarim, 1/10 of that, a mana is 100 dinarim, he has to give 1/10 of that lakupa. Lakupa, as we'll explain in the Gemara, is basically for her to have perfumes and makeup and things like that. Now, we'll have to explain exactly how you do this. This doesn't say, and the Gemara will tell us this, doesn't say asar dinarim every day, every week, every month, every year. So the simple understanding that we'll ultimately reach is that this is the lifetime amount that she's entitled to based upon her ksuba. If she ever uses this up, and the only question will be is how is it paid out? Is it paid out as a lump sum? And you can see this in Tosos Dira Maskel. Lo Nemru Dvar Malol Ela B'Yushalayim, and in Dira Maskel that Liom Rishon Olucho Yom B'Yom, I'm getting these ideas from these two Tosas, and so he basically is going to pay either a lump sum or it's going to be a sum that's paid out every regular basis, which we'll discuss what regular basis we're talking about, and then if and when she uses this up, then her husband has other obligations to go and pay her, but this is based upon her dowry, what she's entitled to. It might be more than she normally would be entitled to just from her husband, but if she brings in a dowry, for every 100 mana, she gets 10 mana back, for what's called lakupa, for her usage for cosmetics and perfumes, etc. Now, this is l'chol mana o mana. The Tanakhama tells us this is for every single 100 zuz. Every money that she brings in, she's entitled to get 10 back for her kupa. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel Omer, no. Hakol kimin nakamadina. The simple understanding is Rabbi Shimon Gamliel is arguing with the Tanakhama, but the Mefarshim explained that they're not arguing where there was a set custom, and everybody agreed that this was the custom. So if it was done in a certain way, so then even Rishon Gamliel says that's the way it's done. But he says, where it's not a set custom, or the customs differ, so then you follow Minhag Medina. And some suggest that he's not really even arguing with the Tanakhama. He's saying that the Tanakhama also agrees, if there is no set custom, so then this is the custom that you put into place. But if there's a set custom, or if they wrote down otherwise, you follow that. Others say no, that he's arguing with the Tanakhama, and when there is no set custom, Rishon Gamliel says that you don't just follow this Mishnah, you follow what the custom is in that area. In any event, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel is telling us that this is not an absolute set and fast fact halacha, but this was the custom. And if the custom is different someplace else, so then you follow a different custom. Okay. Now the Gemara starts off and it's the same question that we had previously. He said, this Mishnah is hainu, the same exact as the previous Mishnah where we said, posei kinegdom chamisha osamana, where if the wife's family, the father of the wife, gives 1,000, so then the husband has to write him 1,500. So what's going on? So again, the Gemara gives the same teretz he gave before, Tana Iska Rabba, but Tana Iska Zuta. It wants to teach us this is true for a large amount or a small amount. And Tzricha, you need both. Because the Tana Iska Rabba, if you only told me the large amount, I would have said the Nafish Ravacha, because there's so much potential over here for profit when you know, rich people are able to invest in big investments, and that's how they make a lot of money. And therefore, because it's such a large investment, so in that situation, we understand why he gets 50%, he has to add on 50% to the Ksuba. Abeliska Zuta, but if it's a small investment, the Zuta Ravacha, and he's not going to make so much money, so then, aim low, maybe we wouldn't add on 50%. Tzricha, that's why you have to tell me that. No, so just tell me the small investment, I'll know the large investment. No, I might not. Yes, we need Zuta. If you only have a small investment and you tell me there you have to add on the 50% because the Zuta Ziyuna, it's not so much effort. As Rashi says in Dira Maskel, Zuta Ziyuna, so he says, Ziyuna Yitzia Vechrais. That's how much you have to actually put into this in terms of effort. So if it's a small amount, you don't have to put in a lot of effort. So in that situation, okay, there we say, since it's not a lot of effort, you put in the 50%. Abeliska Rabba, but in a large investment with a tremendous amount of work on his part, so then the Nofer Ziyuna, he's taking a lot of responsibility and a lot of effort on his part to manage this capital, so aim alone. Maybe he doesn't have to hit on the 50% because he's doing a lot of work. For the small amount, he didn't do a lot of work, but for the large amount, he does a lot of work. Maybe he doesn't have to compensate it for that. So therefore, you need to tell me both. Then we quote the Mishnah, the husband has to give for every money that she brings in, so he has to give her 10 dinarim, one tenth of that, for her kupa, for her basket. What does it mean, my kupa? So Amar Ravashi, kupa shel besamim, means to give her besamim. She give her all sorts of makeup and cosmetics and perfume and all sorts of things like that. So she's entitled, if she brings in a very large nedunya, she's entitled to a large amount of kupa, a lot of besamim. Ravashi said, "Lo nemru dvarim halalu el Yerushalayim." This was the custom in Yerushalayim. Elsewhere, the custom might be different, and therefore, in Yerushalayim, where they used a lot of these cosmetics, the women were entitled to a certain amount. Tosfos asked, "But in Yerushalayim, the Gemara in Yuma told us that nobody needed to use besamim because mipnei reach haketores. They all smelled wonderful because of the beautiful smell of the ketores, and therefore they didn't have to because of the reach of the ketores. Lo yutrichos lizbasim." So the Gemara says, "No." Tosfos answers, "Avol tzrichos yilu kupa shel besamim la'adin abasa." They still needed makeup to go and smooth out their skin, make their complexion nice, lahasha seyer, to go and remove extra hair, to be used as a depilatory agent, or lefashet hakomtim, to go and smooth out the folds, the wrinkles, and brings down the Imer Rabbeinu Tam. So therefore, even Yerushalayim, they may not have needed it for perfume, but they needed it for other reasons. Now we have the following shayla by Ravashi. Ravashi said, "How do you give out this 10%? She brings in a mana, 100 dinar, you have to give her 10 dinar back for the kupa. So how do you do this? It doesn't say every day, every week, every month. So how do you give it back? So b'mana hanishom, he says, do you give it by the exact calculation? It's, she brings in 3 mana, so you have to give her back 30 dinarim. Or b'mana hameskaba, or you do calculate it based upon the presumption that it was overestimated and therefore you deduct a fifth from it. So which number do you use? So the Gemara says, "Im timsilomar mona hamiskabel." If you're telling me it's the mona hamiskabel methodology, and Tosfos points out in Dibur Hamasav im timsilomar, he says, "What did the matzil meimar im timsilomar the mona nishim?" He says it doesn't make any difference. Others disagree, but Tosfos says it doesn't make any difference over here whether you use this methodology of nishom or the methodology of miskabel. It's the same question that's asked. So we'll just keep the gears of our Gemara. Im timsilomar mona hamiskabel. If you're using it by what it was written into the kisuba, so then yom rishon o kol yom v'yom. Do you give it the first day or do you give it every day? Now, obviously, Tosfos also points out that if you're giving it every day, so after 10 days, you've used up the entire dowry. So it doesn't mean that. It means, as Tosfos says, and I pointed this out before, does it mean a lump sum or do you give it over the first 10 days, the 10%? And that's it. Then she doesn't get any more until she uses it up. And then the husband has to give her whatever the husband is obligated to give her, even without the bringing in of the nedunya. The Gemara continues and says, "An imtim silomar kol yom v'yom." It's every day. So how long does this go for? Shabbos Rishona, the first week, or kol Shabbos v'Shabbos? Well, you do it every single week afterwards. And if you say every week afterwards, imtim silomar kol Shabbos v'Shabbos, does that mean only for the first month, Chodesh Rishon, or kol Chodesh v'Chodesh, or every single month? So, and that's for the first year. Or is it over every single month of every single year? And this is the way Rashi and Tosfos both say to understand this, otherwise it doesn't make any sense. So I gave it to you in the final way that they understood it, which makes sense, and that is that you're basically giving a lump sum over here, and the question is, do you divide it up over the way that we just said, or do you give it all as one lump sum, but it's only going to be 10%, and the rest, after she uses that up, he'll have to go and support her for this scoop on his own, and the Gemara doesn't give us an answer, take it. We leave this unanswered. Mark continues and tells us the Maisa Shah Yom reviewed Amarav, Maisa Babito Shanaktim Ben Gurion. We had alluded to this Maisa in yesterday's shir, and now we see it inside. So this Maisa with the daughter of Naktim Ben Gurion, he was extremely wealthy, and Shapaskulo Chachamim Arbameo Zehuvim Lakupa. They gave her 400 Zehuvim for her Kupa, for her cosmetic usage and makeup usage and perfumes, Shabisabim Labo Bayom. And they gave it to her that first day. Now, Amlehem, again, we read it 2 ways the other day, we're going to read it 2 days over here. Amlehem, kach tifsiku livinosecha. So should you be given to your daughters. And here, v'onu achareim acharel omeid. And they said, yes, yashukoyach, thank you. This bracha is a beautiful bracha, and we hope our daughters have the same thing. So this is on the understanding that she was very grateful this amount of money. Others say, no, that even this amount of arba meo zehuvim was not 10% of her nedunya. She brought in a huge nedunya, and therefore she was really saying that this is not much. I hope your daughters get gypped out of their amount of besamim as well. But since this was such a large amount, they answered amen in any event, because this still would be a very nice amount for their daughters to get. Now, in yesterday's shiur, we said by the similar case of the Yavam, we said that they didn't answer amen. So what's the difference between yesterday's case and today's case? So Rashi understands it, that this is, in our case, is where her husband died. But that's still a normal part of life. And therefore, they answered amen because they weren't saying amen that their daughter's husband should die, but That's the way of the world. Normally the husband dies before the wife. The husband's often older than the wife. The husband will die before the wife. And therefore, it's not strange, and that's why they answered Amen. Tosfos brings down, I brought down yesterday, the Chiddush HaGadol, said, no, the husband was alive. He went off on a business trip. And therefore, they were asking for support. She was asking for support from the husband's current estate. He was still alive. And therefore, that's why they answered Amen. In any event, that's the first story that we have about the daughter of Nachdim and Gurion. She had a tremendous kisuba. But now we have a tragic story. Tana Rabbanon, Maisa Yochim and Zakai. This was at the turn of the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash. And Shaya Rochev Alachamor Vayotzi Mishlaim. Yochim and Zakai was leaving Shlaim riding on a donkey. Vayu Tamidu Mahalchanach, and his students were with him. This was a very devastating time in Jewish history. And he sees Ra Riva Achaz, he sees a young girl. Shaya Samalaketa Sarim, she was collecting the barley corns that were Mibain Gilei Behemtim Shel Arvim, that were coming out in the excrement, in the dung of the animals that didn't get absorbed, that wasn't broken down, and she was picking out from the excrement, that's how starving the people were, that she was picking out the barley from the excrement of the donkeys, of the animals, of the Arabs, to have something to eat. Now, she sees Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai coming. Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai, as we'll see in a moment, was one of the people that was at her wedding, at this huge kisuba that she had. He was one of the signers of the kisuba. Kivin Shiru also she saw Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai, this Atva Bisara, she covered up her face with her hair. But Omdo Lufanovich, she stood before me and she said to him, Rabbi, Omra Lo, please help me, I'm starving. Rabbi, Parnaseni, please give me some food. Omra Lo, he said to her, Biti Miat, who are you? So she tells him, Omra Lo, Bas Nachdimon Ben Gurion Ani, I am the daughter of Nachdimon Ben Gurion. And he says to her, Oh my, Biti Mamon Shobes Avich. Your father was so unbelievably wealthy. Where did all your money go that you're now here digging out the kernels of barley from the excrement of animals? You have nothing to eat. What happened to all your wealth? So Amalosis, he tells him a very, very important idea. Rebbe, lo kidein maslin maslin Yerushalayim. Isn't this the popular maxim that they say in Yerushalayim? And that is, melech mamon. If you want to salt away your money, preserve your money, cheser. Go and give it away. In other words, give tzedakah. The tzedakah that you give is the only thing that you have that really is yours. And therefore, if you give lots of tzedakah, it's basically God saying, well, you're a good steward of my money, I'll be sure to give you more money. If you're a bad steward, you don't give a lot of tzedakah, so then HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I'll give the money to somebody else. Now, the Amri law, others said that it's not the money over here giving to tzedakah, it's chesed. Use your money to do lots of chesed. Similar idea that basically she was saying that we didn't do enough stock of a chesed in our father's house. Now, he did a tremendous amount of stock of a chesed. So what's going on over here? So the Mefarshim explained that, no, the general rules that you're not supposed to give more than a fifth to tzedakah don't apply to a very, very wealthy person. So let's say he gave 20% of his money to tzedakah, but he should have given 80% of his money to tzedakah because he wouldn't be impoverished. The reason why you shouldn't give a lot of money to tzedakah is because you're worried that you're going to become impoverished. But if you have billions of dollars, so even if you give away 80% of your money, you're still going to have billions left. You're not going to be impoverished. So therefore, he should have given more. No, Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai said that your own father was also very rich. So where's all the money from your father-in-law? He also put in a tremendous amount. Okay, maybe your father didn't do the right thing, but what about your father-in-law? So Gemara says, Bozev Yibidizeh. As Rashi says, they mixed their money together. They invested together their money, and therefore they both lost out. Amalo, she said to Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai, Rabbi Zocharato Kishchasamta Ksubasa, you were at my wedding, and you were the one that signed on the Ksuba. You were in the Ksuba. So Amalan and Tamidav, so he told the Tamidim, yeah, I was there. Zocharani Kishchasamta Ksubasa, yeah, I remember that Ksuba. It was huge. But Yisi Kore Ba, when he read the Ksuba, it said that she was bringing in Elef Alofim, 1,000 thousands of dinari zav mibei savia. Her own father had brought in 1,000,000 dinarim that were gold coins. And that's separate, chutz mishel chavia. Her father-in-law had also promised to give a huge amount. Bach Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai. And at that point in time, Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai broke down and he cried. And he said, Ashrecha Yisrael, we are very fortunate to Klai Yisrael. Bisman shows of Tzon Shal Bakom, when we do what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants, and Kaluma V'lashon Shaletz Behem, then nobody can start up with us. There's no nation, there's no language, there's no people that can harm us. However, however, when we don't go and do what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants, then everybody can start up with us. Most of them be at Umashvala, then we can even fall into the hands of a lowly nation. Not only that, we'll even fall into the hands of the animals of a lowly nation. In other words, at the time of this destruction of Beis HaMikdash, Nebuch, because of our sins, so she was falling into the hands of the animals, that she has to pick out the barley from the excrement of these animals. Now the Gemara asks what I asked before. It says, "V'naktim v'guri lo avat stalker." He was such a big baal chesed, big baal stalker. V'tanya, we learned the brisa. Amu lo v'naktim v'gurian. We said about v'naktim v'gurian. K'shir yotzi v'beiso lebeis hamedrash. When you would go from his house to the beis hamedrash, they would roll out a red carpet. Kalei melas hayu. They would put out all of these fine woolen garments, so he would step on them and not get his feet dirty. He would turn to sample salmon of olive and matzi and tachtav. They would walk, put them down for him to walk on, and then they left them there for the poor people. So it was a one-time usage, and they would let the poor people take it. In other words, this is a way for him to give tzedakah. So the Gemara gives two terutzim, which I alluded to before. He did it for his own honor, and not for the mitzvah of giving tzedakah. So it wasn't done l'shem shemayim, and even though we say that by tzedakah, it doesn't have to always be l'shem shemayim, if you wanted to have the full benefit of preserving your money, so if you do it l'shem shemayim, you'll be guaranteed the full benefit. So that's terutz number one. The boy's same. Terutz number two, k'dibay le'lemeved lo'ava. He didn't give as much as he should have. Again, because k'damar yinshis, people say, l'fum gam lo shichana. As strong as the camel is, that's how much you can load up the camel. So a very, very wealthy person doesn't have any concerns that he's going to become impoverished and fall to the kupa of the town people to support him. So, right? If Bill Gates has $100 billion, and he gives $80 billion to tzedakah, he's giving 80%, $20 billion ain't shabby. And therefore, he has no problems in giving such a large amount. So in fact, even Ben-Gurion should have given a lot more tzedakah. Maybe he gave 20% to tzedakah, and he's thinking he did the right thing. But if you're that wealthy, you have to give even more. Well, we'll continue with more stories about Nachman Ben-Gurion, but we're going to stop over here. With this, we conclude today's share.